Hello, everyone, and welcome to DataFem, where we engage you with stories of how innovators across the globe are using data to achieve new heights in their respective industries. I'm Danielle, founder of Dicayo Data, and I'm here with Monica Miller, who is a senior developer advocate at Starburst and has played a huge, huge role in putting together Starburst's upcoming Data Nova conference. Data Nova will be happening on Wednesday, October 23rd, 2024, through the next day, Thursday, October 24th, 2024, and I will be there attending, and you will also hear a lot more about what's to come and why you should attend this virtual and free amazing event in our episode. So without further ado, let's get to our show. Well, Monica, it is wonderful to have you here on DataFem. So thank you so much for being here. Let's get started with you introducing yourself and telling us how you came into the world of data.
Well, I just want to say thank you so much for having me. I just love this. I love this experience. I love being able to talk to other women about, you know, important things in data and tech and science and all of it. So I just want to say thank you for having me here. I'm very excited to be here. I actually got started in data through an internship with the company that I previously used to work for. And essentially, they kind of, I like to say, hired me as a personality hire. Well, disclaim whether that's true or not, but I basically got up there and the intern interview was very chill. It was like, oh, who wants to lead the room in a Sudoku puzzle? I was, you know, a mechanical engineer start, so my undergrad, but I was, you know, bubbly and fun. So I like to claim I got that offer as like kind of the personality offer of the intern class. And I have a lot of thanks to my friends in that class who helps me in my little group. Kind of, we were writing SQL queries with Salesforce. So Salesforce proprietary SQL query language, which was just kind of hysterical getting started there. And then from that was able to do well enough to get a job and then really dove into the world of data. It was something I wasn't experienced with, but I had the opportunity to kind of learn and grow every day. I had a really good team around me, which a lot of these companies do, and they taught me everything. And then, you know, by 8 months in, I was willing to like help people and contribute. So that's really how I got started. It was not planned, but I love it. Data is messy, and I think that it fits with my personality.
Love to hear it. Also, huge Sudoku fan. I play. Yes. I like wait until 10 p.m. for the New York Times crossword Sudokus to restart. And I just do them every night. And I just wish that there were more of them.
Of course, there's so fun. I'm a big puzzler, like in general. So Sudoku, like puzzles, Wordle, all of it. I'm like obsessed.
It's crazy to see them online these days because I just remember like long car rides, even now train rides, I just have these books of them that I'll do physically. And it was like an only in pen. You can only do it in pen. And now we can do it online. But yeah, Sudoku, great. Personality hire, great. It's cool. I feel like data is one of those careers where you can learn a lot on the job. And I do want your take on that because I've just noticed that everyone always has to learn no matter who you are. So even if you're the CDO, you might have to learn something totally new tomorrow. And I think that can be intimidating, but it can also be kind of refreshing and encouraging that if you're somebody who's just good at jumping in and being confident, that might really be enough for somebody to, you know, take a chance and be like, this person's going to be great for it.
100%. I think for me, one of the things kind of going along the lines of what you said, it's, you know, data is the type of job where there's so many different tech stacks that you do have to learn it. Your data engineering career could look vastly different depending on even what cloud you use, right? So even the tech stack, the tools, the technology, you have these legacy data companies, it looks very different. While the principles are still the same, like data quality, making sure that you're, you know, tracking all data governance. There's important things that are, you know, threads throughout, no matter what tech stack you're using, but you have to learn whatever you do. And so I think that is a really unique space with data. It's not just like the, you know, software tech stack of the world where everyone's using the same couple technologies, which makes it fun, right? So if you have the type of personality that you want to attack it, that you're willing to get into the weeds, it's okay for things to be, you know, something you have to discover, then I think data is definitely the place. And I think it's less about, you know, I think data engineering is a pretty technical field, but anyone who's willing to work at it or just research or learn their specific tech stack, it's nothing that anyone can't do.
How do you feel data engineering differs from like the career software engineering, which I think it seems to be more established over time?
Right. I think it's just got a lot more gray around it, right? So software engineers, like you just said, very established, whereas the data engineering space is like you could be making an Excel spreadsheet or filling out a wiki for someone about your data model, which is just a crazy day-to-day versus like, you know, completely just pushing up code for the already established environment. Or, you know, data migrations are so popular, things that you're going to have to like consider and think about. But it's just there's such a wider range, I feel like, of what your day-to-day could look like as a data engineer versus, you know, specifically a software engineer. I also think the data engineers get pulled in a little bit more for the business side too, because you're really just developing that data that they're going to use. So you really have to have that tight and cohesive partnership. Not saying you don't have to on the software side, but it's just something that's a little bit more cut and dry versus the data engineers where you'd build a whole report and then they're like, oh, that's not what I wanted. So it's really important to have that like tight data producer, data consumer relationship so you can, you know, build off of that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's fun to see the industry kind of dance around these different names and try to pinpoint what you might actually be doing. When I started DataFem 5 years ago, there was even more confusion over what these different roles do. And I feel like in a way, the languages, the skills that overlap between positions, you kind of start to see the same languages show up. And I think that's what's made the difference personally, but I'd be curious to hear what you think.
The data space is still kind of relatively new. I feel like, you know, last 20, 30 years is when we really started to see data become a big deal and people actually have those roles and transition from just you're a DBA to you're actually doing data engineering. So I think that's part of the transition too, is we're just kind of figuring it out. And, you know, we like to say like every company has a data portion, like every company is kind of a data company, right? So you need someone who can dive into it and understand it. It's just, where do you siphon off that line? And, you know, DBT has made it kind of confusing too, because they have the analytics engineer, which is also like a lot of the responsibilities that I did as a data engineer. It was just like a little bit more infrastructure. But then we also in the Trino community have a lot of infrastructure engineers or like software engineers who are setting up the infrastructure for your Trino users. So then it gets even more murky. I have no answer to your question. It is very difficult. But it's like, it's just, you know, the core principles that I can align with when I talk to other data engineers are sort of like the struggles we go through with dealing with, you know, bad data, bad information, and not being able to please our data consumers or our downstream users is really kind of where I see the issues.
Yeah, tell me more about that and how your role as a developer advocate comes into play there.
Oh, my role as a developer advocate is so fun because I get to do like the fun parts I enjoyed at my data engineering role. You know, I obviously can talk a lot. So I got to be in a lot of fun meetings as a data engineer where I was helping to dissect some of the, you know, choices we were making or listening and communicating why we were deciding to build it this way or anything like that. Specifically last time was like a cloud migration we were doing. And it was like, okay, how are we setting this up? It was a joint conversation with the business, right? Where you all have to be involved, you all have to choose. And so being a developer advocate, I actually got into it. This is a segue, but I got into developer advocacy because I was helping with the training program for new hires. And that was like my best days of the year was when I got to teach and I got to just help them. You know, I helped actually iterate on the project that was already established. And I just loved it. I love them seeing the results and being able to like connect with seeing that end result, right? And so that was kind of what got my wheels turning about developer advocacy. And then developer advocacy now is a lot of it's listening to the day-to-day pains of the data engineer and talking and figuring out how can we do it better? How can we try and make some of those go away? But it's definitely the same challenge from a different place for sure.
Yeah, I feel like there's even a marketing component to being a developer advocate that I've come into contact with because I'm always looking for the marketing team when I reach out to people. And so sometimes, you know, you guys are my favorite people to have on the podcast in so many ways because there's just so much communication that happens. There's so many, you know, communication errors to, I guess, troubleshoot. And it's fun to kind of talk about those troubleshooting times on the podcast. So you guys make great speakers, great guests. The marketing component, I always find that interesting that that's also part of your job.
Well, I think that, again, it's like the same thing as data, whereas why I fit so comfortably into it is like every developer advocate's role is completely different. And it can be different based off of what the organization needs, right? So my role looks vastly different than what it looks like a year ago because of where we've grown. And so the marketing component is definitely a big component of my job. I think it was Anna Filipova who wrote an article about the purple people. And I feel like that's just where the developer advocate sits. And again, a lot of the, some engineers can sit there too, or product managers or marketing people who are, you know, technical. It's a lot of these people who are able to bridge that gap between sort of the, you know, technical people or the people who are more on the business side, and being able to bridge that between the two is just whatever way you slice it is just an important skill. And so I think, you know, with whatever title, developer advocates definitely have to do that to in some capacity, right? So very similar to the data space where it's all messy and you got to figure it out and you got to communicate.
Yeah, in a way, it seems like, you know, you can be the developer advocate that's more marketing heavy if you like marketing, or you can be the developer advocate that's more engineering heavy if you miss coding and, you know, you want to communicate about coding more than the kind of outward facing marketing. That's nice. The purple people, I've definitely heard about Anna Filipova and her work there. She would make a great guest too. I've talked
to her sure.
times on LinkedIn. So yeah, I think like all the content that gets produced about these roles is really helpful, and it's helpful for hiring. It's helpful for just conceptualizing what you're looking for. It's helpful for networking at conferences. Mm-hmm. There's just so many ways to document what's happening in the data industry in live time and have that really shape what happens next.
Yeah, and I think the developer advocate, like you mentioned, it is kind of like a choose your own adventure space. So it's just what are you good at? Where are your skills? And then building on it, essentially. Like I am not a great videoer, but I can definitely do the recording and send it to someone for them to do all of the fantastic mashups, and make the whole vision come to place. Whereas I lean more in onto the live events because I like doing those a little bit more. It kind of emulates the classroom environment for me, which is where I fell in love in the first place. So yeah, it's completely agree. It's where you just you have to kind of think about what you need, where your strengths are, and where your organization is like looking for help, essentially.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's get into Data Nova. I'm so
Yes.
excited for this next month, watching all of the promotions happen. Thank you for letting me be a part of it. I want to hear all of the details, like you mentioned the classroom setting. Like, are we going to have tutorials? Are we going to have, I know we're having panels. I know that we're.
Right.
That's what I've been seeing a lot of posts about with people that we both know. It's so exciting.
Yes, Data Nova is going to be awesome. So this is a virtual conference on October 23rd and 24th. It's Starburst annual Data Nova, which is kind of our virtual data conference where we get together experts in the field to talk about things that they're passionate about. I am so excited about Data Nova this year because I got to curate a lot of the content. So a lot of these were asks that I made cold via LinkedIn. So thank you to all those people who said yes. But a lot of it is about, stuff that I would want to have heard as a data engineer and where we're thinking about. So we have a couple of themes. We're talking about the data lakehouse, we're talking about data management, and then of course we're talking about your data needs for AI. So that's a little bit different than just talking about AI in general. I think it's more about actually approaching it as what do you need to do to set up your data so that you can meet any of your AI needs. So we have a couple experts speaking on that. We've got some awesome fireside chat set up. We've got some amazing panels, and I am just so thrilled because I've been able to see the growth year over year, and I feel like they've kind of passed the torch to me and my team right now. Not my team, but like my, all of my what is it called? Coworkers, all of them to be able to really step up. So I'm super excited about it. I just think this conference is going to be fantastic.
I'm super excited for everything, and those themes are super in when you think about what people in data are wanting to hear about, especially the lake houses, transferring. We talked about data migration earlier. I think like a lot of companies will send their people to just hear about the best practices for that, and that's really exciting. How do you select the themes? Like, what does that process look like?
Well, it's really interesting. So I start kind of, with a big list and kind of whittle down, like, this is a great segue. Data Lakehouse Summer was like huge, right? So we heard about Brat Summer, but really in the data space, it was Data Lakehouse Summer with the Tabular acquisition, the Polaris announcement. There's a lot of things going on where data lakehouses are going from this thing that everyone's talking about to really people looking at implementing them, right? Starburst is obviously like a data lakehouse platform, or we help you build your data lakehouse with Trino and Iceberg. So that was one thing that was really natural for us to fall into. Another thing that I like to do as a developer advocate is it's way more easier to be authentic when I'm talking about things versus like making up a marketing story about them. So it's way easier for me when I can like make the two overlap. I really struggle with trying to build a story first and then making it make sense. So Data Lakehouse was just a natural progression for us based off of where we are as a company and what we're doing with, everything in the space and kind of what the space is talking about. Another one is that data AI management. So how are you managing your data for AI? That's becoming a very lakehouse heavy topic. So that's something that, obviously needs to be talked about, kind of an extension, just diving a little bit deeper there. So again, another authentic topic we're seeing in the market, seeing with our customers, seeing with prospects. And then the third one is kind of a passion topic. I'm really excited for like the data management aspect because, that's like data governance, data quality, all those things that I dealt with day to day that are really, really, really important to me. I always like to incorporate them because you can never get away from them, no matter what theme you're doing. You need your data foundations, right? Which I guess maybe now that I'm thinking about it, we could have put those two as a foundational theme together, but we'll call them 1A, 1B.
Exactly. And even after you decide on the themes, there's still so much to settle and so much to develop as you go, even as the conference goes. So you can definitely add in those ties and those connections, even if people might not make it themselves, which they probably will. So that's very exciting. What can attendees expect to gain from these themes and, the programs that'll be going on during the conference, and what do you hope they gain?
So this is another thing where it's like, I hope they line up together because for me, it's way easier to be authentic. I feel like when I was a data engineer, my favorite experiences were learning from other data engineers or learning from people who were doing cool things in the market or had good ideas. And that's what I hope people take away. I hope people listen to some of these sessions from Slack, from Bank of America, from people from Rapid7, and they get the ideas of what people are doing and can apply them to their day-to-day to make it easier. That's my main goal. I just, I want to share those ideas. I want Starburst to be a leader in the data space for, putting out good content. And so that's what I want people to take away. I want there to be things that they benefit from and can apply to their day-to-day jobs. So we'll have stories from a lot of people. One is doing a Hive to Iceberg migration. So we'll get to hear about that. We'll hear about streaming into the data lakehouse, things that are just relevant, the problems that people are facing today that they either are thinking about, are actively working on. So kind of something that they can either get some pain taken away before they start the project or in the middle of the project, they can say, oh, this was, helpful to hear before we had to go the whole way through.
Right, because people show up at conferences, virtual or on site, for so many reasons. And often, I'm thinking about the reasons that I would show up, that other people would show up. And I feel like the learning tools and just coming with an open mind is so important, because if you come with an agenda, there is that authenticity piece missing that, you bring up. I think that the agenda that you might come with, you have to have a plan for how am I going to benefit from this, and what do I want to contribute and what do I want to communicate. But there's just so much to learn, and in a way it's like you're there to amplify what your company I guess achieves in the next few months. But on the other hand, it's also kind of a time to detach and just learn what's put in front of you.
I don't think personally that you can put a good conference on in a vacuum. I think you have to bring these external ideas in. I think you have to be talking about what's relevant, what's going on. And if you're just looking at like a specific, oh, we're only going to talk about Starburst, I don't know that that makes sense in today's market. You really have to be bringing people together, especially with a virtual conference when the physical connection you can get from an in-person conference is like those hallway chats, which everyone loves. That's like the highlight, right? So, in order to not have those one-to-one peer interactions, you really have to bring stories that people can do sort of like a one-to-many, right? Have those tangible interactions of like, oh, I would suggest this, I would try this. So that was really important to me, especially building out a virtual agenda, because I know everyone's time is busy. So it's like, okay, if you're going to sit at your computer and watch a virtual session, even if it's in the background, it has to be something that's at least enriching your day, right? I'm imagining it like I listen to music sometimes when I'm doing work tasks. So am I making a better agenda than like a Spotify playlist? That's kind of, I need something better than that, right? That will be worthwhile for someone's time.
And that'll make them pause what they're doing, and
Right.
like, yeah. Nothing against Spotify. I love Spotify, but I think that is a good barometer, because, a good virtual conference, as I know this is going to be, does make you kind of stop and reflect. And at least also there are, with the platforms the way they are, there's so many ways to contribute and so many ways to connect. And I think before COVID, maybe people rolled their eyes. I was always really happy to have virtual events, but now, that was the way that people were connecting, and I think people are still excited about those ways. I'm involved with Our Ladies, Gabriela de Queiroz's organization that just blew up, and has so many chapters around the world, and we just had so many events that were joint events. New Orleans Our Ladies paired up with Miami Our Ladies and had all of these tutorials or speakers, and it was just a way for people to connect in a very difficult time. And around that time, that's when I was starting the podcast too. So I think people are even starting to see content that isn't like a synchronous event, like content that you can listen to on your own time, is almost an event in and of itself. The meaning of that word has changed.
100%. I mean, we're seeing really popular sessions will blow up after for rewatch, right? You know, it's like a very different situation where the one theme that we've seen is like the good content will prevail, you know, virtually. So if you put out something that's good, then it will seem to get, you know, the better rise versus, you know, I think sometimes when we're in person, it's like, oh, we'll put anything on. It was great because of the atmosphere. Now you're kind of being put to the test of like, how can you deliver on something that is, like I said, beneficial to the person attending?
So you've already heard quite a bit about Starburst Data Nova Conference, and we're going to tell you a lot more after the break, but here's the lowdown. Data Nova is Starburst's premier data conference where data experts share their successes, challenges, and authentic stories, discussing relevant conversations in the data space today, like data lakehouse, data management, and data foundations for AI. The conference is free, virtual, and available to all on October 23rd and 24th, 2024. And we, as DataFem listeners, have our own special link that we can use to register, which I've put in the show notes for you. I have already registered myself for the conference using this link, and I look forward to hearing about your favorite panels, your favorite topics, and the networking opportunities that you come across during these dates. Now, let's get back to our show. Have you gotten feedback in advance yet about what people want to see and what people are expecting to hear?
Well, you know, this is where I want to dive into like my favorite session. I am so excited for our data governance panel, which is a fully woman-based panel, which is fantastic. These are women speaking about their day-to-day, high-level executives talking about their real problems that they're facing in their industry and, you know, on their teams. And that's just something that I don't think that I got to see enough when I was a data engineer. I was always attending talks from men and or, you know, other things. And so it's been really important for us as our content team to make sure that we put together an agenda that is a good representation of the people that you're going to be working with or reporting to day to day. And so I'm super excited for that because that's something that was really important in our mind when we were building our agenda.
Yeah, we had talked about how exciting it is to have Laura Ellis from Rapid7 on there. And
Yes.
because I now know that you were a speaker at her Data Mishaps Night in 2023, and I was a speaker in 2021, which feels like ages ago when
Right.
it isn't that much time in between. But that was the first one, I think, in 2021. And the fact that they're still doing it every year is just so cool because I think, you know, that humor is just so important and that willingness to admit you're wrong. I'll be the first to say that when it comes to life, but work in general, I am so scared to admit when I'm wrong. Part of it is just PTSD and trauma, to be honest. Everyone who's been through like intense trauma, that's like really difficult to admit you're wrong because you could be in danger, you know? And being able to de-escalate that in a work situation, I feel like is so important, especially dealing with data that people are paranoid about already. It's you know, a lot of the stories that show up in that event, which I will link to in the show notes so that people who have no idea what we're talking about will know and attend the next time. I feel like a lot of the stories are about sensitive data.
Right. And that's like
So.
such a great place to have a community too, because, you know, we know what our day in and day out looks like, but maybe people who are on the business side or on a different software team don't, and they don't realize how easy it is to miss something or put the wrong, you know, dot in a SQL statement or whatever you may be doing that maybe has messed something up. And so it's really cool to have that shared experience and like, oh, commiserate and collaborate.
And it just lets people know who are stressed about something that they might have done wrong, that it is universal. You can point to somebody else who's messed up and it feels like the end of the world, but it isn't actually the end of the world. I feel like that panel is going to be so huge. I mean, there's already so much buzz around it on LinkedIn. I think that, you know, there may be some people that just attend for that panel,
right,
and really want to hear from those women and then also end up sticking around for everything else.
Yes, we have. I mean, that panel is, you know, like I said, near and dear to my heart, but we have a really awesome session also about data engineering culture from Slack. This is another pair of powerful women who wrote an article for International Women's Day earlier this year talking about, you know, the importance of building a culture and what they're doing at Slack to sort of, you know, make it a safe space, make it collaborative. And so I'm very excited for that panel or that, you know, presentation as well. So we also have, like I mentioned, this awesome streaming panel coming in talking about you know, streaming into the data lake house, which is super cool. We've got a Trino panel, of course, talking about the power of building a data lake house with Trino. But that's for a lot of the people open source wise thinking, what is the next step? Where are we going with our data lake house? What query engine should we use? How can we build off of Trino? That's going to be a fantastic panel. And we also have a really special, you know, sort of navigating the next step of the data ecosystems with our CEO, Justin Borgman, and Matt Turk, which is going to be really cool because they actually did a conversation in 2019 talking about sort of the importance of optionality in your data platforms. And I feel like we're still at that place where it's really coming to see, you know, how important it is to build in that optionality into your data ecosystem. So I'll be really interested in their kind of updated version of their talk, but you know, they'll talk about the data lake house. They'll obviously talk about 2024. So building into 2025, it will be really interesting. And then of course, Michelle Yee will give a talk and Ben Stansel. So I'm very excited for those staples in the data space.
You mentioned open source, and before we transition into kind of more social media influencer type discussions, which is related to all of this, you had mentioned Apache and you're mentioning Trino. I think this open source conversation is so vital to everything that any conference does, because it's the way that people participate. And I've had Dremio sponsor some episodes of DataFem where we talk about Apache Iceberg and how when something becomes an Apache project, what does that mean? And how almost something being an Apache project gives it that, I guess, oomph, like that extra,
right,
that extra accountability really isn't the word I'm looking for, but it's almost like you've worked so hard, you've put in your hours to open source, and now you're an Apache project. And, you know, now a company like Starburst will recognize you. And there's just that whole flow that happens with open source. And I think that'll be really exciting to talk about at any event. But, you know, the ones that are kind of combined between or I guess commercial, corporate and open source, that's always the most interesting for me to see kind of where those intersections lie.
Yes, I'm so spoiled because I obviously joined, Trino was developed over 12 years ago, right? A query engine starting at Facebook, and then it just kind of spiraled from there. And then Starburst has been a company for 6 years now. So Trino was way here before Starburst even existed. And so I'm really spoiled because it's really ingrained into our DNA. I always tell, like I was telling our chief product officer the other day, like my conversations or whenever I do virtual webinars are so easy because I just get to tell the story, right? I just get to say, we want you to use Trino no matter what flavor it is. And if you need that extra level of like security, or you want that governance layer, or you want, you know, to really build your data lakehouse without the resources that you may not have from a big company, that's where we want you to use Starburst, right? But I get to just champion Trino all day. And so it's a very fun job. And it's true. We start our labs and I'm like, we're going to use Trino today. Are we going to use the Galaxy project? Because that's going to get you up in 20 minutes so we can talk about the principles. Yes, but I'm just here to tell you about Trino. So, I mean, it's so nice. And then I think another important thing is that you don't operate in a vacuum. All of these open source projects, even these tools in the data space, where like using dbt, using Trino together, a lot of these things you have to put the pieces together. The modularity is so important. And I think that that's another thing that is unique in the data space, where there's just so many different tools. You have to be able to play nice in the ecosystem. So again, kind of spoiled because Trino has all these different connectors. So we're just born into that, you know? So it's very awesome to, you know, invite. We have, you know, we Apache Iceberg. We're big. I'm a big Iceberg fan personally, but like we also have big work that we've done in the Trino space with Delta Lake, with Hudi, with Ibis, with Voltron Data, all of these different people that we're working with to just try and make everything better. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And then, you know, all of these integrations might not be intuitive to people. Like I came into data science through stats. So I'm, you know, R Studio, which is now Posit, but like, you know, their tool is still R Studio. And I'm like their biggest fan in the New Orleans area, at least. And you know, it's interesting. There's just so many times that you sit down and you're like, why is this not working? Why is this not working on the back end? And it's because, you know, Anaconda wasn't downloaded. That's the only reason why my program wasn't working. You know, I had Keras set up, I had TensorFlow set up, and I'm just like, what is going on? Why not? And it's because there was nothing to receive the Python, you know, IDE, and I didn't even open Anaconda. It just had to be downloaded. So, you know, that's interesting. I think, you know, this kind of transitions us into you as this content creator that teaches people, but then everything that you do, everything that you figure out could be a piece of content that doesn't exist yet for people that they really might not know and just spend hours guessing and then happen to download the right thing and it clicks, but you might not even know why at that point. So that's a good way to kind of talk about how the content that you create, even though you clearly just love creating it, is also so helpful to other people who are, you know, at a different stage of their journey.
We try our best to feel the pain for you. I think one of my bios is like trying to help data engineers do their jobs by feeling their pain. And so it's like I'm trying to figure out all of the different ways that you could go wrong before you actually do. And then either putting it in our docs, writing a blog, and saying, how can I, you know, warning, warning, you know, don't do this the way I did. Don't spend 3 hours on it like I did. So it's definitely a unique personality type because for me, I like it because I like to explore. It's kind of low risk because I'm just there to try and figure out all the problems. I'm also pretty detail oriented. So I'll write down where things are wrong or where we don't have docs yet. So it's very easy for me. It comes kind of naturally to my personality. But a lot of people, you're right. Like you find something in your eighth doc link trying to figure out why this won't work. Or, you know, I've had the same the first time I back in, you know, 2019 when I was starting my career, and I the first Python virtual environment I had, I was just could not figure out at all. Right. And so it was about taking the time to learn it, to document it, to read the documentation, to blog about it. I always like to say, like, I have to have some basis of knowledge. Again, this kind of goes back to the authenticity thing. I'm not going to talk about anything I have no idea about, right? So I have to at least suffer through it a little bit to then be able to share the pain or give advice. But a lot of it is just, you know, putting the ideas out there so other people can either build on them or collaborate. A lot of it is trying to be this starting of the conversation. I feel like that's kind of my role, is trying to start the conversation so that people way smarter than me can take it to the next level. That's what I always say in all my webinars, is like, if you want to dive deeper, I might not know the answer to your question, but I will find someone who can. And that's where I have like my awesome engineers come sit down and we'll figure it out together. But it's always nice to just kind of start the beginning of where we're at.
Definitely. And I think that might be the academics in us coming out because, you know, there's just so much of a different timeline when you're a student. And, you know, it's almost like when you're a student, your job is to sit there and, you know, to be the best student, you get lost, you get in a trance state. And there's just so many times where I was, you know, a research assistant during my MBA, just sitting there with these programs, you know, and my job was to sit there and almost take more time, because I take more time, maybe I'll figure out a better way to do it. Maybe I'll be quicker. Maybe, you know, I just want to show my professor that I'm willing to sit in the same place for half an
Right.
hour. There's just so much that goes into being an academic star that is just on a different timeline than being a corporate star where you use the same five packages every day. You probably won't venture outside that because you don't have the time. That's somebody else's deliverable, you know? So I think it's really cool that you, in a way, like you bring this, you're saying it's your like your personality, but it's also your love for academia, like bringing this kind of not w willingness to struggle. I put struggle in quotes and people can actually see me. I think, you know, it's that different timeline in a way. And I don't know if I would love your thoughts on that.
Oh, my family and friends love to say I love to suffer. So it's like grit and tenacity and sitting there and suffering through it. And actually, a lot of it is I will reach a point where I get fed up and I'll ask questions. A lot of my job is like asking the questions. Why is this not working? Where is this going on? I am not afraid to look stupid at all in front of our engineers or anyone on the community. I'm like, why isn't this making sense? Can someone explain this to me? I will hit a point where I am ready to kind of learn and break it down for other people. So I think that is part of it, is definitely the asking of questions for sure.
Yes, I think so too. There's even a DataFem episode called You Ask the Right Questions. Because, and it's interesting that you say that you will troubleshoot on your own and then you get to this pressure point where you start asking questions. And I think, you know, I'm thinking like the data scientist I am now in a way, like identifying that pressure point for different people is really, you know, something that could be, I guess, monitored and identified.
Right. It would be really interesting to see what type of personality does what, or who has a limit for each. I think that would be really interesting as a side project.
Yeah, new episode coming up in.
For sure.
Well, so I want to get to this representation portion because that is definitely not the part to be rushed. That's why
Yeah.
we're here, you know? So even though looking at Data Nova's roster, you wouldn't know it just from looking at you guys are doing the best job I've seen in a really long time, at just having all these different kinds of people come together and give talks. And even just what you've mentioned, I'm sure there's so many more talks that highlight this further. But you know, what are some ways that you envision growth happening in terms of female representation in the data space specifically?
Oh my gosh, this is such a huge question. I mean, it's first of all, the female representation is fantastically the most important thing to me, but it's also like this underrepresentation that we see from different minority groups as well. Like, I have been involved in three of Starburst conferences now, and I've just seen it grow every single time that we put on a conference because we're making it more of a conscious effort. I think we're at 43% female for our entire conference. So I'm really excited about that. Hopefully next time it's 50, but I'm really, really happy at where we're at. And I think there's just things that we need to do. I've had some really fantastic mentors. I've had some really fantastic sponsors, and the sponsors being in the rooms that I'm not in and then championing me, male or female, I think that's extremely important. And so having those people in my life, but then it's also, I think being willing to reach out and ask a question. I talked to Carolyn Mooney, who is the CEO of NextMove through a YC startup foundation, because I reached out and she was so forthcoming about trying to help with the career and help with the progression. And she gave me 30 minutes of her time. And I still talk about that every interview or anything I do because that was so impactful to me. So being able to really just kind of, talk about salary, talk about expectations, talk about negotiation, all of these things that we're not necessarily talking about. One community that I really enjoy looking at is called Alpha. I also found it from the YC startup boot camp I did, but they basically have this community of women where we're trying to give a space for everyone to be able to do that. And I think it's been really important. So it's like learning from everyone above and then being active in the community myself so that I can then, talk with my friends about it. And, even the conversations and with my tech female friends have changed within the last couple of years, because it's like, how do we, instead of just being okay with where we're at? How do we push ourselves to be, you know, getting the same amount of salary, getting the same amount of benefits, all those things that are extremely important. So it starts with, you know, conference representation and being able to hear those people and reach out to them, but you have to do it every day in your day-to-day life too.
Yes. And without getting, you know, totally spiritual, I think there is some shift happening in the cosmos. And what that shift is goes back to what you were talking about with authenticity. I think, you know, when you said earlier, I'm not going to talk about something that I don't know about, that is a very female thing that I think we've been put down for in the past, but now it's almost like a badge of honor. And the way you said it, that was like very, very powerful. And it was like something to brag about. And I think that's because people are really scared almost of lies that they've been told, you know, things that seem phony on the surface, things you can't trust, and, you know, trust and just transparency are so important in a virtual realm, you know,
for sure.
Miss some cues, you miss things. So you have to really be able to trust that people are coming with what they say that they're coming with. And that is something that I think, you know, the male traditionally, this is not a blanket statement, but, you know, kind of the fake it till you make it, like, I will say I'm there when I'm not there and not even really realize, but being more, I guess, just really introspective, thoughtful about what do I really know? That's such an attractive quality now.
I mean, my husband and I have talked about this because he was told in the classroom that he was really smart. And I was told as an elementary school student that I worked really hard. So you carry that. You carry that as you go through. And now he works really, really hard and he's really smart. And I would say the same thing for me, right? But it was something that we've seen a transitional period as like we've both gone through our careers of, you know, being able to, I think the trust and authenticity is like getting really highlighted with the world of AI. And it's like, did you write that? Did someone else write that? Who? But I, you know, that's something that's really nice for me is like, I can just build my brand. I can just be my person, who I am. People know that Monica at Starburst is a little bit too brutally honest and might offer her opinion where she maybe shouldn't, but she'll do her best to really like back that up, right? So, you know, that's the only thing you can control. But I agree with you. It's so being valued right now because there's so much content being made that's just kind of getting lobbed over the fence. And I can still read the personal stories from my friends or like listening to podcasts like yours or like Lindsay Murphy's or things like that. It's like being able to hear those stories and kind of connect is so much important. It's so important.
Yes, I agree. And I love that story about you and your husband and kind of how you arrived at the same place, even though you were told different narratives about yourselves, you know, growing up, because those do stick with us. What are some of the main like calls to action or, you know, the way you phrased it as just positive habits that have helped you get the representation that you have, that, you know, there are several women out there who are just aspiring to that?
Oh my gosh, it's so sad. The way that has actually helped me to get to the place where I deserve to be is actually being not afraid to ask for it. I think there was a stat that back when I was starting my career, only 4% of women negotiated their starting salaries, which is just insane to think about because you have these people coming out with highly technical degrees. And again, people are just telling them how to negotiate and for the male side, or they're just being given a higher number. And I didn't negotiate my first salary. I now tell everyone to negotiate, right? So that's a habit that even in my jobs now, I will, if I feel inclined, negotiate and work with the team because I value myself more. I'm having better conversations with, you know, my friends. We're being a lot more transparent about salary. We're being a lot more, especially with our like trusted group, right? We're being a lot more transparent about, hey, I think you're kind of getting not what you deserve here. And let's have a conversation about it instead of just, you know, everything's fine, don't worry about it, really actually diving in. And then, of course, for me, it's like not being afraid to reach out and ask for help, where I have, reached out cold and made connections. I've done a lot of, especially women that I look up to, I have asked for 30 minutes of their time and they have given me life-changing advice just with that 30 minutes. Whereas before, I had been like, oh, I'm never, I don't deserve that. They don't need to talk to me. That's just too much. But again, I saw my husband doing it with male leaders in his field. He encouraged me to do so. And some of those 30 minutes have been, advice that I will carry for the rest of my life. So that's something that I hate doing it, but I push myself out of my out of my comfort zone to do that. And then I also have, again, people who I trust who are looking out for me, male and female, in rooms that are I'm not in. And I think that's important too. So, and then it's just things like I mentioned, resources, building communities online. That's been really important for me too. COVID was very, very tough for a lot of people, but one of the things that I did not realize pre-COVID was how important an online community could be. And I think it's really changed my life to be able to like ask for advice from strangers.
Yes, especially, I think some of that, it's, and it wasn't even coming from having nothing to do. There were different challenges. But some of that, you know what? I will take the time to talk to you because there's this big thing happening that we're all going through. Some of that's lingered. I've noticed that people did change from being in that, adverse environment. And I think, realizing that we are meant to connect, we want to connect. And sometimes it really is seeing our male counterparts do things that seem instinctive to them because, I've definitely been able to help males in my life be more introspective, and they've to help me even ask questions that are kind of touchy-feely. But ask them. I have a husband too, and he read somewhere, or maybe he came up with it himself. I don't actually know. But he was saying, and he owns his own business as well, so he's not really thinking about interviewing anywhere. But he was talking about what a good interview question when the company asks you, what do you have to say, or what do you want to ask is, what's the biggest problem at your organization, and how could me in this position help you solve it?
Yep, that's a great one.
Because if somebody's going to spend money on something, it usually is to either fulfill a need or fix a problem. And maybe there isn't always a problem, but phrasing it that way shows this kind of commitment to helping. And, a lot of times people do collect skills and not think about how it's helping the world. But I guess I've never been like that. I've always wanted to know, how my skills are going to contribute in a larger way.
100%. And I think I just want to give one last shout out. My old CMO, Jess Iandiorio, wrote a couple of articles that I just think are fantastic. One of them is called She's Not Strategic. And it talks about how other people in the room can help you actually be more strategic. So kind of the learning and circulatory patterns we were just mentioning. And then also the mentorship and sponsorship ideal came from her. I had always experienced that. That one hit a little too close to home when I read it the first time. But basically, your mentor is your person who is supporting you. Your sponsor is speaking for you when you're not there. And so it's just having, all those relationships. Both her articles are fantastic. They helped me look at things a different way. And so those have really carried me in how I view meetings now in my life, for sure.
And I just love the phrasing of that she's not strategic. It comes off as like, something that is negative, but then it's not because it's like, I want to read more. I want to hear more about that. I
Right.
want
You're like, there's no way all these
to
women who have built businesses and podcasts and CMOs of companies aren't strategic, right? It's more about like, it's like, of course they are. It's just, are they given the opportunity to be?
Exactly. Well, I want to be mindful of your time, literally prepping for this conference, but and you've already been such a wealth of resources that I will be following up with you on to make sure I get them right in the show notes, but also checking them out myself. And even if they're ones that I know about, I will check them out again.
Please. And share any resources you have with me. I think that's the most important. Danielle, I want to say thank you. Like, having conversations like this, this is the most important resource, right? Is like having your podcast, having podcasts where people feel safe and supported and can share their ideas. That is the most important thing. So just thank you so much for all that you're doing for, you know, DataFem and beyond.
And thank you for everything you're doing with Data Nova and just your own content and your own, you know, personality and wealth of knowledge. It's really exciting to just take a moment away from our daily tasks and you know, have a meeting of minds that's on a different level.
Yes, this was so much fun.
For everyone who's been listening to this episode, we hope you've enjoyed the preview of the content that's going to be at Data Nova in just a few weeks. Definitely sign up if you can't make all of the sessions. I know that at least you'll make a few, and that'll be enough to engage in discussions on social media, LinkedIn, X. Dikayo Data has presence on those platforms, as does Starburst, and we look forward to hearing from you. You never